This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Bleachree Lin. Tonight, a trio of headlines have us wondering about youth participation in politics as politicians and as voters.
First, some analysts have suggested that young politicians aren't stepping up enough, so we're going to find out more. And then we speak with UMNO's Cheryl Hamdan to find out how young people can navigate the political scene. And finally, have the events of the last 2 years alienated young voters?
So tell us, do we need younger leaders in politics? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08 and let's jump right into it. This is actually a story that sort of has its roots in a report that came out in the Malaysian Insight, where political analysts were quoted as saying that basically our political parties nominate the same old leaders as election candidates because the younger generation are not being encouraged to replace them. This, of course, comes on the wake of Pakatan Harapan renaming Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim as their prime minister candidate, despite some people calling for a new replacement. It is worth saying that DAP Lim Kit Siang, who is 80, reiterated his support for Anwar, who is 74.
Yeah, I think that was worth saying just to highlight what we mean when we're talking about older leaders, right? It's not just people who have been in the scene for a while, but literally in terms of age, they are older. And we said analysts, and actually one of them was a guest that we have quite frequently on the show, Iman Research Program Director Badrul Hisham Ismail, who said that young leaders in Pakatan aren't putting themselves forward and to replace Anwar, and therefore the party has no choice but to fall back on the 74-year-old leader. And also pointed out that if we look at parties around the country, right, they're all being led by, shall we say, men of a certain age. For example, Perjuang Chairman Dun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad is 96. He is still being talked of as someone who can lead the country as a potential prime minister candidate. PAS's president, Dato' Sri Abdul Hadi Awang, is 73. UMNO's president, Dato' Sri Ahmad Zaid Hamidi, is 68. Amanah president, Mat Sabu, is 66. So the question here, I think, is we are seeing a younger crop of names popping up, and we see them, I think, partly because of a level of prominence that they attain on the floor of parliament, through their work on social media, all these spaces that are new, new-ish to the political arena, new places for politicians to talk, to showcase what they're doing and to talk about their principles. But does that actually translate to party growth? Does that actually translate to on-ground political growth, right? I feel like there is a difference here between clout and that specific form of it, and actually being primed to take over party leadership and therefore leadership of the country.
So to be clear, right, and it's very easy to fall into being ageist with this discussion. To be clear, this isn't a knock on leaders of a certain age, as you said. There's a lot to be said for experience. There's a lot to be said for familiarity with the landscape. But I think because we're at a particular point in time in Malaysian politics where there has been so much call for change, there's been so much call for a new sort of political not just political moves, but rather even the way parties relate to each other, the kinds of conversations that are being had. I think that it's worth asking that question of, if we want change, who is the next line when we talk about change? And unfortunately, with a lot of our parties, that line isn't necessarily clear. Even whether the parties are thinking about them is not very clear. And I just wanted to point out that in an interesting sort of adjacent development, Penang just passed the Penang State Constitution Enactment Amendment Bill, which allows those aged 18 and above to be candidates for state seats in the next polls. And they Penang actually follows Sabah, Perlis, Terengganu, Sarawak, Kelantan, and Perak. So I think with things like that, with things like Undi 18, the importance of having a younger crop of people involved in politics is clear. It's just not necessarily being translated.
Yes. And with the introduction of younger politicians as well is this question of pathways, whether or not there are, like you said, clarity, right? Whether or not there are clear pathways, whether or not people understand how it is or what it is to be a politician and to involve yourself in the machinery of the party and in running for all these different things. I did want to read a message that's just come in from Dennis, actually, in relation to what we were saying earlier about wanting to be very clear that this is not meant to be an ageist conversation, because Dennis says, older leaders in politics are okay if they are progressive thinking, but the likes of Kit Siang and Anwar should retire. So two specific shout outs there. But I think that this idea of progressive thinking or innovative thinking or open thinking is an important one to consider. And I think those are words that are normally associated with fresh blood. And I think that that's partly why this call for younger people might be coming from, which is not to say that people who are older can't do the same.
So that's what we'll be talking about this hour. First, we'll be looking at this suggestion that young politicians aren't stepping up. So we're going to get a lay of the land there. We'll also be speaking with UMNO Shahril Hamdan later. And finally, we'll discuss young voters and how they feel about being involved in the process. We'd like to hear from you. Do you think we need younger leaders in our politics? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll be discussing this with political analyst James Chai. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:15. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're discussing young blood in our political scene. And we'd like to hear from you. Do we need younger leaders in politics? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now joined by political analyst James Chai. James, welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening.
So people often point out that our politics is led by older men. How does this shape governance and politics here in Malaysia?
So I think we can probably look at it from two perspectives. One is the general perspective. The idea that a lot of politicians in the scene now are above 70 years old, when most of the electorate, almost half of the electorate, are probably below 40, and the largest group are probably in their 20s, there is a problem of representation, right? So fundamentally, a democracy cannot work if the people who represent you are too far away from you. So I think that's the general argument there. But there's also a very specific idea to the time that we're in. We are in the cups of a revolution that's driven by technology. What that means is that the gap between each generation in real terms have become larger. Now, I'm 28, but if I think anyone around my age who talks to someone who is 21 these days, it feels like you are actually 40, right? So there is a huge gap because of the tools that are given to young people these days. And that has a severe impact to the policy that's created. Now, it doesn't necessarily just mean that the Ministry of Technology must be led by someone younger who can identify with more of the technological changes. But in the wider sense as well, issues regarding expression, privacy, identity, convenience, all of these areas will have an impact if you compare it between an older and a younger person leading it. Now, I also think that older people may not necessarily understand new ways of engaging with the largest electorate, as well as this would fundamentally affect issues of accountability. So those are the most immediate things as to how it would affect how policies are created.
So do you agree that our younger political leaders aren't stepping up sufficiently to lead the way? Because that is, in some ways, the premise that we started our show with.
Yeah, so I think that in order for us to identify that, it is quite important to see that if a regular person wants to be elected as an MP, what kind of road they have to go through. So we can actually look into the most orderly political career in Malaysian history, which is Ismail Sabri, right? So he actually started off when he was 24 and 25. What he needed to do was that he needed to choose a seat first, and then you have to run as in one particular division. You need to be a part of the committee, and then you rise up to be an information chief, and then a youth chief, and then only an AMNO chief. It took him 15 years before he actually became AMNO chief in that division, to even have a standing opportunity to run as an MP. So by the time that he became division chief, he was already 40 plus years old. So it's sort of like the game in politics in Malaysia only starts when you're 40. So whatever that you had before was really following this pecking order and waiting your turn, because you cannot just go in and say that you want to run as division chief. There are many people are already waiting for their turn and you have to fight it out. Now, that's at least the general perspective of just getting the minimum of what you need, which is like running as an ADUN or like an MP. You need to go through that that cycle. However, what is even more demotivating for people who understands that this is the process and wants to actually try it out, they are demotivated primarily by how dirty division and party politics is. In anyone who has a sense of what's going on in these areas would know that the dirtiest elections in Malaysia that was ever fought are all in party elections. The amount of money that was thrown around is sort of like a given. Right, so that necessarily means that anyone who believes that they want to bring change would not want to go through that. They would want to try to circumvent the entire system and just trying to contribute. Or even if they say that, okay, I have the heart to do it, they would probably be polluted by the time that they reach a divisional chief level. So I think that a lot of claims about how young people are not offering themselves do not have sufficient consideration of the realities that they have to go through. It is not as simple as a person saying that, hey, I think I'm a better candidate for prime ministership, and then people will start paying attention to you. You sort of have to pay your due in a very sort of dirty fashion. So until that has any form of change, we're still stuck in the same loop.
So looking at our political system as a whole, then what sort of systemic changes might we need so that we can encourage the emergence of these new leaders?
Now, when it comes to a political party level, so it is not as though we haven't had some very capable young politicians who are more well known. But if you notice their political background, it is normally as a result of the highest authority in the party, either Lim Kit Siang or let's say Anwar in the past, who has allowed that opportunity to happen. So there's a huge concentration of power at the highest person in deciding whether I want to allow you to circumvent that system and I want to allow you to run as an MP, right? So that is very, that's the reality of what political parties are. So what that means is that a lot of the systemic changes that you want to introduce in that political party has to start from there. I could imagine that it would be quite helpful that if you have a quota system for young people of a certain age to run as an MP or as an ADUN, very similar to what some political parties had advocated for a gender quota, right? The second thing that I could think of would be to merge youth, the youth wing to the main arm in that political party so that you actually have a seat at the table. What is actually happening now is that the youth wings are always deemed to be too radical, too extreme for mainstream politics, and that's why they have to sort of be crazy for a few years before you can actually be absorbed into the mainstream, which is a very, very weird concept, right? But to be honest, what I actually think is most effective are not these hard rule changes. Instead, there are softer tactics of creating academies, traineeship or apprenticeship, or allowing these people to assume sort of like a shadowing role of the existing politicians or ministers to have that sort of like cadership system so that they are trained for the job. Because I think what is also true is that politicians, regardless of age, really, they need to go through some sort of training system, especially for young people, because there is this huge bias against them when it comes to competence at the task. So I think if those things are done, then there's a higher likelihood that there will be more young people joining.
So on that note, right, I did want to ask you this, because we've heard the call for older players to quote unquote make way for younger, fresher perspectives. Mm. Is this a position that you agree with?
I think they definitely have to make way for it, because I do feel that a lot of the bottleneck is actually there. A lot of the pushbacks that we currently have starts from that level. And to be honest, just by a very logical premise, right? If you have people with huge desires of becoming prime ministers who are age 80 or 90, and at the most you can stretch it was like 64, which is like Shafi Abdal, right? That's not very encouraging, because it's very hard for you to justify that system, to open it up for young people. So I definitely do agree that it starts with them. If not, it is very easy, like what Pakatan Harapan did, to always revert back to what is familiar and what's comfortable by just going back to their same choice over and over again and lament why young people are not stepping up. Instead, they should actually be the one offering it. This is the reality. The people who hold the most power are also the people that you rely on to sort of loosen their grip in order for other people to have it.
Now, let's look at the major players that are in our political landscape across parties, right? Who are the names that are most often brought up as the new generation of leaders?
So I think the ones that are closest to sort of fulfilling all of the elements of being competent, relatively young, as well as popular with the masses would be Khairi Jamaluddin, Nuri Izzah, Rafizi, that trio. And then when you go down the rank, you have like the people in their 30s. So Shahril Hamdan, Nick Nazmi, Hannah Yeoh, Yeoh Bi-in, that's the 30s. But then there's this huge gap until Syed Saddiq. So Syed Saddiq is around 28, 29. But there is almost no one in that space that you can think of who are in the mainstream. Now, although some people may say that, oh, that means that if you have Syed Saddiq, the claim against young people not having space is therefore invalid, is a very hard argument to hold, because there is also a huge thing to be said about how Syed Saddiq is probably one of a kind, right? Not everyone would have that kind of star power, because here's the truth. Most of the time, you have to wait for the political leaders in the party to give you space before you can actually amass popularity and become a viable candidate. However, for Syed Saddiq, he was the other way around, which is he was popular enough and therefore Mahathir wanted him to be part of the team at that time. What that means is that the system currently relies upon you making a stature for yourself outside of the system before you can actually be part of it. So this means that the system itself is stuck. It doesn't allow the flourishing of good candidates within. Most of the time, if you're ordinary and you go in, you'll probably be stuck there.
So we have this WhatsApp from Patrick who says, youth participation in politics is important. However, the current trend is mainly caused by their disapproval of the current situation without being well educated about political ideals and policies. Proper political education should be included in our school curriculum, which covers a lot of ground, but I thought maybe you could respond to that.
Yeah, I agree and disagree on two things, right? I think political education is definitely important, but it should be applied not only for young people. Introduce it to schools, good. That's a systemic thing. But to be honest, what we have learned from so many bad governments in the last decade is that political education is kind of needed for everyone, right? So that necessarily means it doesn't come naturally to you to be able to understand policy and industry and society well, unless, let's say, you've worked in a large company, or like you have huge influence among the NGO community and so on, then you may be more familiar with that particular realm. But essentially, understanding policy requires some sort of training, right? You need to be part of government to know how the levers work, to understand how basic principles work. However, I think on that, if you remove that, which means that you assume that everyone in this space are not well-educated when it comes to policy, then you compare them in terms of what they can offer. And most of the time, last time people voted Pakatan in because they realized that, okay, at least they are not corrupt. They seem to have a conscience around here. And I remember, Hannah, you talked about this like 5 years ago, that when it comes to being a regular politician, what you really need is just a kind heart and common sense to get things done. Because most of the time, you're just a middle person, right? And you need to know how to communicate well, because that would be either you'll be remembered for a blunder or you'll be remembered for always saying the right things. But other than that, I don't think the art is actually that complex.
James, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thanks so much.
That was political analyst James Chai weighing in on younger leaders in politics. Do send your thoughts our way as well. After this, we will be getting insight into how to maneuver politics as a younger politician from Sharil Hamdan, Youth Deputy Chief of UMNO. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're discussing the call for younger leaders in politics. And we'd like to hear from you, of course. Let us know, do we need younger leaders in our political scene? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And we've got plenty of thoughts. Let's look at some.
So I just wanted to say that there are some that are simply saying it's not about youth. Kinwai, for example, says, I just want a capable politician who can do actual work. Age, race, religion, gender, it doesn't matter to me. Honestly, I think that's a low bar to set. And yet how often we are disappointed, which is a good point. Lok is also saying exactly that. It's not the age or the gender. Most importantly, they have to be competent, intelligent, and they must have morality.
I mean, I think those are all, if I might say, the bare minimum for being a good leader to a country. I think it says a lot of where we are that that's become the things that we ask for. But I completely agree. I do think that the call for newness is possibly because people have been finding that they're not getting enough of those qualities in what we already have?
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to an earlier message which talked about, from Dennis, I believe, which talked about the need for progressive thinking more so than any particular bar or of age. And I understand that. However, as usual, a multiplicity of views. Kim says, people are forced to retire at 60 in every profession, but it's okay to be a politician. Also, there's no minimum qualification required. There are so many double standards. So running a country is not as important to have qualified individuals like running a big corporation. Also, on whether I want to see more young politicians, of course I do. This is their future. They should step up more and not wait until the country has deviated from their expectations only to try to fix it. By then, it's not your future you're building. It's the next generations. This is where we're at. We used to be told to not get involved in politics because you can't change anything. See what happens now. We should have gotten involved when we were younger. Also, our older politicians seem to be so detached from what's going on in social media and around the world, which is the main reason I think that they should step aside and let the younger individuals who are willing to keep up to date take over. Every profession needs to refresh their skills and stay updated. Why not our politicians?
So much to talk about there, Kim, and some very good points. I think one of the things is, of course, that whole thing about, oh, nobody wants to be a politician, you shouldn't get into politics, which in itself is the problem and the challenge for young people who do want to get into the field, right? Who have ideals, who want to make a change. And I think, unfortunately, that comes hand in hand with a lot of what James spoke about earlier, where he talked about how it's often quite a dirty and difficult process to actually make it in the field. But I think, while I don't think that we need to not have older politicians, I think that question of a changing ideal or a changing mindset is something worth keeping.
I agree. I also think refreshing your skills and staying updated is an interesting point, because we do see politicians taking to social media, but they use it primarily as a, I don't know, more as a dissemination tool than the way that we see younger politicians using it, which is to not disseminate views, but actually to get on there and speak directly to people and to actually have policy discussions, which I know, you know, if you're not following politicians on social media or, you know, on Twitter, what have you, it may sound quite unfamiliar. But the truth is that that's where a lot of politics happens. And Kim, you're absolutely right that our older politicians, even if they are on social media, aren't using it that way.
So keep those thoughts coming. Do you think we need younger leaders in politics? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we wanted to also look at this, of course, from the perspective of voters, particularly on the wake of the fact that we're hearing lower numbers in terms of voter registration. So we wanted to look at why this is happening and whether the events of the last 2 years have sort of caused a disillusionment when it comes to politics in general. And for that, we are now joined by Firdaus Husni, who is Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Center for Constitutionalism and Human Rights. Firdaus, thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
How have the events of the last 2 years factored into the feelings of young people in Malaysia on voting and politics?
Well, thank you. Firstly, thank you for having me back on the show. It's always good to be talking to you all. Looking at the last 2 years, last 2 years event, I would say that at the outset, I have to mention that it would not be fair to paint our youth today with a broad brush. Yeah, so that's one. But secondly, having said that, we are looking at a section of our society that is either about to be legally allowed to vote or just allowed to vote. And so these are our youth, these are our citizens, our rakyat who are only now starting to be more and more interested in issues concerning politics and governance. And so when you put yourself in their shoes, yeah, relating that to the events of the last 2 years, these events are what form their early impression, their first impression of what politics and governance is about. And so it shouldn't come as a surprise that those events raise a couple of fundamental questions to them in the sense, what is our democracy really is and who exactly benefits from the democratic process that we have in this country. And of course, fundamentally, what is the point then for me to vote, whether or not I decide to register to vote, whether or not one person decide to not be involved in the entire process at all? What is the point if we, if the last last 2 years event can happen? So this might be what they are thinking. That's my observation.
And how much does the delayed implementation of Undi 18 factor in here? Because as you rightly point out, we're talking about a sort of newly minted voter base that's entering at this particular moment.
I do think that it does have quite a bearing on how they look at our democratic process and how on their involvement in that process. When the 2019 constitutional amendment first took place, the way I see it, to me, that's really a recognition of the force of our youth. That they are a force to be reckoned with, that we must have the constitution guarantee that they be given a say and be given the right to decide who gets to represent them in parliament. I mean, this is big. But to know that 2 years down the road, this is still nowhere a reality, then, you really can't fault them for thinking that the system, the current system, is letting them down. And we are not even hearing any proper justification from the EC as to the delay and why 2 years, it's still nowhere in sight. That's what I think about that.
We are seeing a slowdown of voter registrations as well. What do you think this the reason for this might be?
Now, when we look at the number or the rate of new voter registering, I do think that this could not be attributed to only one, particular reason. There's several, and for one, you can't exactly discount the pandemic with the MCO and the restrictions to traveling. Going out to register to vote would not be in their list of priority. So that's, you know, that's one. And then second, when we look at events of the past, the months leading up to, let's say, GE13, GE14, you hear stories of new voters going out and lining up at the post office to vote. There's even like, you know, a certain sense of excitement even in, you know, in the air. But you're not seeing that currently. They are talks of an election, but that's not enough to actually create that push for them to actually go out and register. So that's one. And second, I do agree with what YB Ong Kian Ming pointed out, the fact that, well, on the one hand, it's good that the Election Commission is now making it possible for people to register online. How many people out there actually know that they can do so? Yeah. And so to me, clearly, that goes to show that there's not enough that's being done by our EC to get more people to vote. And of course, now, you know, there's barely any voter registration, mobile voter registration exercises going on.
Firdaus, why is it important for people to still sign up to vote in spite of all the events we've seen?
Okay, I'll be honest. When the event of the last 2 years first happened, or rather when Langkah Syaratan first happened, you know, I did have that, you could say, existential crisis, in the sense that then what is the point to the work that civil society is doing? And what is the point to the work that we at MCCHR is doing in empowering our youth if, you know, when looking at those events, you know, it raises a question as to why and what is the point, right? And so, to me, how we should address that is by re-looking at how we define our democracy. That our democracy should not stop at the ballot box. That our democracy here should be about going beyond the ballot box as well. So that is one. And second, the very idea of democracy itself is not perfect. That's one. And second, even our version, the Malaysian version of democracy, is not perfect. I mean, I get that. But to me, all the more reason we should be involved in that process and make it better, and make sure that we use that voice that we have through the exercise of our right to vote to then push for a better system and demand for a better system. Yeah.
Firdaus, thanks for speaking with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me again. Bye.
That was Firdaus Husni, Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights, or MCCHR. And of course, if you would like to register to vote, head on over to sbr.gov.my. And do share your thoughts with us as well. Do we need younger leaders in politics? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll be speaking with Sharil Hamdan from UMNO to hear about what it's like making your way in today's political landscape as a younger politician. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:51. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're going to be closing off our conversation on younger leaders in politics by speaking to someone who was a younger leader himself as he made his way up through UMNO. So very shortly, we'll be speaking with Sharil Hamdan, Youth Deputy Chief of UMNO. But do send your thoughts our way. What do you think? Do we need younger leaders in our political landscape? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now on the line with us is Sharil Hamdan, UMNO Youth Deputy Chief. Sharil, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
So let's go back to when you first started in politics. What interested you about getting involved and how did you get started?
Oh, big question. What interested me was, I think like many youth today, you know, things have changed in many ways, but in some respects, they've always been that way. The younger generation always feels more agitation for things to improve and things to change. And that feeling was prevalent even in my generation when we were growing up in the teens and early 20s. So that's what really pushed me towards politics and, you know, a number of other personal reasons that we'll need longer time to speak on. How I started was as a backroom officer, if you like, working for the MP for Rambau in 2008. I didn't have aspirations immediately to be a frontline politician myself. That came about slightly later.
So what were the main challenges you faced setting out?
Depends on which role you speak of, but in both cases, as a you know, behind the scenes type of a person in his early 20s, the challenge was really, you know, in some ways, standard challenges when you start a new job. You know, how you blend in, how you adapt to the working environment. But specifically for me, joining UMNO, there are specific challenges that are unique to joining UMNO. And that means for somebody who is quite urban in his background, there were certain adjustments in terms of, I suppose the kind of vocabulary, the kind of expectations that I wasn't attuned to in the beginning, that I had to, you know, empathize and understand. And that's a continuous journey that I have till today. Once I became a frontline person, so to speak, the challenges evolved to become a bit bigger, in a sense that I had to present an image of myself as opposed to simply doing policy work or advisory work behind the scenes without having actual skin in the game. So those are, you know, sort of the evolutionary processes that I had to go through.
So talk to us about party structures and how welcoming they are for young politicians. Basically, what is it like trying to grow within a party?
That's one of the more difficult things that exists in every political party, I suspect. I can obviously only speak with some authority of my own party, but I imagine it's very similar across the spectrum. How welcoming are they? Let's put it this way. This isn't a Gen Y or even, you know, Gen Z type of startup company where younger people are, the DNA of those kind of organizations are to almost explicitly and almost sometimes to excess welcome young people and feel that young people are part of their DNA. For political organizations, because of the nature of politics, they will welcome you, but they will immediately set out to assess, or if you are being less charitable, judge how suitable you are to contribute to the organization. And as in any field of politics, obviously there are immediately rivalries and sometimes prejudices that you'll have to just get used to. As long as you remember why you joined in the first place, you should be okay.
So we started the show by looking at the fact that some analysts have said young leaders in political parties aren't stepping up to replace the old guard. How would you respond to that?
I would respond to that by saying, and this sounds a bit sour, but it's 7 o'clock, so why not? It's easy to say these things when you're outside. When you're inside, you understand that you have to pick your battles, and you understand that you can't just move to your desired outcome in a straight line. And that doesn't mean you should go in a crooked way. What I mean is you sometimes have to understand, or you always have to understand that, you know, if you fight every battle and you simply go for broke, eventually you will go broke, and you will go broke very early in your career. It's a very personal call and a personal judgment about how you navigate the realities of a political organization, especially as a young person who wants to change the organization. Change is always difficult in any field, especially in politics. There will always be institutional inertia. And how young people set about to get to that outcome is for people who are inside the party to fully understand. Having said that, you know, voters and people outside political parties obviously have a say, or should have a say, when they assess how young people behave or young people step up or not. And that's something that we are all cognizant of. I'm just, you know, sort of hoping that people on the outside understand that sometimes it takes a bit longer in certain organizations than meets the eye.
We just have about a minute left. Now, the uncertainty of the last 2 years has really left many Malaysians quite disillusioned with politics. What would you say to encourage more youths to stay engaged and to get involved?
I don't think young people need much encouraging to stay engaged. They are very engaged, and I think it would be a mistake to suggest otherwise. Maybe the question is to have hope in the political system. That's where it's a bit of a more difficult question. I think it's to perhaps persuade them that what's happened over the past 3 years be a bit of an optimist and hope that this is an aberration. It's a situation or set of circumstances that we've never encountered. Those special set of circumstances have led to special sets of outcomes. And it doesn't change the fact that over the 60-odd years, that 64 years that Malaysia has been in existence, if you look at the span of time, there has been progress. And sometimes it's two steps forward, one step back, but there has been progress. And having faith in that through the political system is absolutely crucial so that we, we contribute in our lifetime to a better country.
Cheryl, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Cheryl Hamdan, UMNO Youth Deputy Chief, speaking to us about how young people can navigate the structure of politics. Send your thoughts our way. Do we need younger leaders? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.